Rob Guarnido never gets old. He just keeps on keeping on. I wonder if he's still alive, actually. I don't know if anyone's heard of him lately. But welcome to the People's Temple Podcast Project, Van Skyvertown. My name is Kevin Oakley. I am your host this evening. We have our entire crew here. We didn't think we would for a little bit, but we have CHV, who's here.
How you doing?
I am good. I'm good. Hopefully everything's great for you as well. Naring is keeping it loud and proud.
I am present.
And our resident musical wunderkind, Michael CG.
That is me. It's pretty good over here right now. It was thunderstorming earlier, so I was kind of worried about the internet connection, but it seems to have subsided. We're good to go.
Well, thankfully, maybe spring is coming. And
someday.
Finally, last but definitely not least, Ethan Van Skyver, what our temple is named after.
Hi, Oakley. I'm glad you're leading this time. I think it's a refreshing change of pace.
Why, thank you. It's a beautiful day in the neighborhood. I actually saw green everywhere I looked today. There's no snow for the first time this year. So it's a beautiful day for sure. So how was the weekend for everyone? How was the week?
Well, for me, this is Michael speaking, by the way. If you remember with the last podcast, Ethan was talking about how everything in his life broke that week. Well, that week was this week for me.
I knew it.
Yeah, he knew it was going to happen. That's why he talked about it. But for some reason, my every single aspect of my computer has been breaking all week, and that it even almost prevented me from being on the podcast today. In addition to that, earlier today, I got a call from my bank telling me that there's some weird activity, so I had to have my card shut off because evidently some video game lover somewhere had somehow obtained my card info and was buying video game stuff over the internet all day with my card.
Now, can you be sure it was video games and not Magic the Gathering cards?
I cannot be sure. It was all from sites that sell video game and other geeky stuff, so it may have been Magic the Gathering.
Oh, shit.
Just so yep. You guys know, the gigantic Star City Games Magic the Gathering Expo is being held in my backyard on Saturday.
Literally in your backyard.
Literally in my backyard.
Now, Nearing, wasn't he saying something? Didn't he threaten you? We're talking about Ian Auld, of course.
Of course.
Yeah.
Didn't Ian threaten you?
It's bizarre. I've had no interaction with the guy in like 9 months. And he said he's going to Star City Games, and he has no time to hunt me down because he's going to be gaming. But if he ever sees me at con, he's going to whoop my ass UCF style, UFC style.
You know what kills me about that, though? He didn't actually say your name. He referred to your city and your state.
Yeah.
Right.
And, you know, I feel as though Ian probably Google Maps that place a lot.
Yep.
And thinks about it.
Google Street Level.
He might use the like the satellite function and just go for like a super, super close up of your house, and he just like stares at that image for hours on end.
And he sits in front of his screen going pew 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 like he's shooting at it.
But there are actually more people on Facebook that know me as Hagerstown Stalker Fanboy and by my given Christian name.
Nice.
That's what I started calling you that, so, you know.
You did.
Catching on.
Nearing, how far is Hagerstown from Gettysburg?
Oh, gosh, about 20, 25 minutes.
Yeah, because I was there a few years ago. I visited Gettysburg for the first time and because I was on a history tour. And it was a nice trip, but you know, needless to say, when you're in there and you see like restaurants titled things like General Pickett's Buffet, I mean, that's, you know, you're in a tourist town.
Oh yeah, our big claim to movie fame is that we're 10 minutes from Burkittsville. So Michael's favorite film, The Blair Witch Project, was set here.
Yeah, Blair Witch was a scary movie, though. Wasn't that Michael Horror Fanatic you? I mean,
yeah, I've actually never watched it because I personally found the marketing for it to be very, like, childish. Like, they were trying to make everyone believe it was real. And it just came across as cheesy the way they went about it. I think if they did a better job of that, like, were more realistic about their fake promotion, I might have liked it.
It was the first of its kind, though. Yeah, I mean,
it kind of harkens back to what we were talking about with William Castle, that they were just kind of like doing the same thing he did, just on another level.
Well, that's true.
No, I want to say, for the record, I dated a girl once who was so dumb. No, I did. Who was so dumb.
How dumb was she?
Not only did she believe the movie was real, but when I pointed out to her that the three actors were on Leno, she said, no, those are actors hired by the studio to play the kids for the marketing.
Now, that would be the most genius marketing ever. Instead of putting actors in the film, use real people, actually kill them, and then hire actors to play the real people afterward.
Exactly. Well,
that's the thing. Like, when you were saying you were offended by the marketing, I was going to say, look, some people actually believed it.
Right.
And case in point, Nering's lady friend happened to be one of them, so...
Right.
But I've said, though, that like that movie works because you have to let yourself believe that. I enjoyed that marketing. Sharice and I, when we first saw that movie, we got a disc of it. Somebody gave us a creepy-looking disc of the movie while it was still in theaters. And we watched it on the computer. And there was this whole air of, like, genuine, you know, like this is footage of people's deaths.
Right.
That was so bizarre and so scary. I remember she just sat there paralyzed after it was over, like so freaked out by the movie. Now, look, you know, that's the way that movie works. It's not going to work a second time. It only worked the first time. But you do, like a magician, like going to see a magician, you have to let yourself believe.
Yeah.
Even though you know it's fake, but you have to just try to suspend disbelief.
Well, and that's the way I was. I totally bought into the marketing. Not like that whore I dated, but I mean, I knew it was fake. But I still I just let it work for me, like going to see a stage magician. Yeah.
Well, I think one reason why it really worked so well is because they built up the backstory and the mythology of the witch and how it was supposedly this folktale that had been around for 200, 300 years. And let that kind of blend into it and to give it sort of like the documentary feel when they're supposedly going to these locations where these murders happen and stuff like that, I think really made it feel more real.
Did it resonate?
Yeah.
Sorry.
Well, did it resonate for you, CHV, because you, you believe in ghosts and things like that. So did it have more power for you because of that?
Well, the reason I liked it is because I like movies that do a lot with a little. And since there's really no special effects in that movie, you know, I love movies like the 1963 version of The Haunting, where all of the scariest moments of the movie happen off screen. And they're either a sound effect that's going on down the hall or something like that. But it just plants a seed in your imagination and completely lets you just go crazy with it. And I think that's the best special effect of all, is just, you know, planting a seed in someone's imagination and letting it just go wild.
Yeah,
I agree.
And I also want to say, and I'm going to ruin the ending, but I mean, you know, Michael's the only one here who hasn't seen it. So, you know, it's been out for friggin' 10 years, Michael. I had the opportunity to meet all three cast members at last year's Monster Mania. And I had the best idea ever. I met Michael Williams. And I said, can we get a picture, you and me, standing in the corner? Right. And I was so fucking pleased with how that picture came out. And I put it up on Facebook, and I had to endure 3 weeks of people saying, why do you have a picture of yourself standing at a urinal next to another guy?
That's what I was thinking.
I was so fucking bitter after that for like a month.
Too clever for your own good. Too clever by half, I think they call that.
There's nothing worse than, you know, such effort going all for naught.
Yeah.
Always assume when you're crafting a joke that people are stupid.
Yeah, exactly.
Sadly, most of them are. most of them are. You had some fun this weekend, Naring, you were alluding to earlier?
Oh, I did. Karen and Krepsi and I, my friend Krepsi, went to Baltimore. We saw a stand-up comic down at the Baltimore Comedy Factory. Very good time. I drank way, way, way too much. much. I was doing bombs. I was doing
someone
my tribute.
Else is new.
Yeah, I know. I was doing my tribute to Artemis from Sunny in Philly. I was drinking Jaeger bombs and Irish car bombs all night long. So just completely liquid nearing night. And they pour me into this elevator, and there's this lesbian volleyball coach with...
How did you know she was lesbian?
I'm just assuming, but I'm going to
say... Was she that kind of lesbian where it was like, oh, God, she's lesbian? Was it like that?
Yeah, okay. She looked like me in an IZOD.
Right, okay.
And, you know, she had, like, I'm going to say, I'm pretty shit-faced, but I'm going to say, like, four or five of her young charges with her, and it's me, Karen, and a friend, and I don't know why I did this, but I couldn't stop doing this. I kept slamming my head into the elevator and blaming it on Karen hitting me. And then, you know, I'd say, baby, why are you hitting me? And like the coach and all her kids would turn and kind of glare at Karen, and I'd be like holding my eye, and I just kept doing it like she's beating me in this elevator. So Karen was pretty pissed on the ride home. But it worked out because I had Netflix.
It was all an effort just to get to watch Cheers all night. Is that it?
I watched Cheers the entire drive home, but because I was so drunk, I kept falling asleep after the opening credits and restarting the same episode for 90 minutes on the drive home.
Nice.
I endeared myself to the car.
Now, does everyone live in fear of that, though? That I mean, in general, in that case, you actually made it look like Karen was beating you. But have you ever had an argument and, you know, it got a little loud with your significant other, and your first thought in the back of your head is like, hopefully nobody heard this because it's going to go badly. When I went to the Dominican Republic, we went out to dinner, and then all of a sudden the next morning, like we got in a drunken argument that night. And the next morning she comes out of the bathroom and it looked like I had beaten her severely. She had a really bad shellfish reaction. And her face was all puffed up. And I'm like, my first thought was like, I'm going to get arrested. Like, as soon as we go outside, somebody's going to see and go, oh, my God, what an asshole. What a pig. You know?
Oakley, when Sharice was pregnant with Hunter, she got really clumsy. And she kept falling down and crashing into doors. And she'd slip in the bathtub. She had bruises all over her. And her parents were coming. We were like newlyweds, and it's like she would literally walk into a door and get a black eye, and I'd be like, "Stop it! You know, it's like, watch where you're going. What happened? How'd you get that black eye? I walked into a door, and looking at me, no, she really did. She walked into a door. God damn, that was the worst time. And Hunter fell off the bed and got a bruise, and it was like, oh Jesus Christ, that's the worst.
God damn it, I'm just trying to make a good impression.
I'd never hit a woman except for Casey Anthony. We went over that.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
Did that last week.
Unfortunately, I never had a knockdown, drag-out argument with my ex-girlfriend, so maybe I'm the anomaly.
CHV, that doesn't surprise me about you, though. I don't think you... I can't see you getting into a heated conflict with anybody. CHV, you know who you are? No, you are Spock.
No, I'm not.
In our group. Yes, you are. You are Spock in our group. You are logical. You are calm.
Not necessarily. I mean, you know,
have pointy ears.
Well, you know, Oakley can start turning my crank about, you know, like gun rights or something like that. I'll start raising my voice in a hurry.
But you know what, though, CHV? I've never seen you one step out of beat. You are cool as a fucking cucumber.
Measured and calm.
Even with those slugs on Yahoo last night who was saying all this shit like how the Sandy Hook shootings in Connecticut were a conspiracy.
Well, dude, what in the fuck are you doing wading through the comments section on Yahoo?
Because I'm gullible for a fight, you know? there's a part of me that likes to fight, which is, you know, part of the reason I met all you guys is because I like to fight and I like to argue.
Now, CHV, this is true. I was thinking about this. I'd almost completely forgotten about this because we're such good friends now. But there was a time when we weren't.
Right.
And you were so angry at me that you were going to pull an Alfie Norris and you were going to back out of you were like, I'm leaving your page, fuck you, and I calmly talked to you and I met you at C2E2 and I said, no, we can be friends, and then we became friends. But there was a time when you were pissed at me. I don't even remember what it was about.
Well, I think I've been pissed at all four of you for one reason or another. You know, and
you
I know
knew it.
Michael and I used to fight like cats and dogs. Oakley and I would fight. Nearing and I would you know, he'd say something to piss me off, and I'd be like, "Oh, screw you, I'm out of here." But yeah, it's. I think that's the ironic thing is that, you know, I started out just like being kind of adversaries with you guys, and then, you know, as Nearing noted a while ago, that once you step away from your Facebook personas and realize who these people are, you know, offline, then you realize that they're not so bad, except for Oakley.
No, except for Randy Perry. Randy Perry.
I don't ever remember getting really pissed at you, Ethan, because, you know, the whole reason I started talking to you is because, you know, I was a big fan of your work, and then I heard you were a conservative, so I'm like, well, maybe this is someone I can argue with. And
oh,
then,
good.
And then, you know, one thing led to another, and, you know, we got to know each other and all that sort of thing, so.
We made out in an elevator, and then we've been friends ever since.
Yeah, have we ever seen the scene from Fatal Attraction? Because I remember when you were sucking my dick.
Jesus Christ. Now, see, the problem is that you just broke away from the Spock persona. See, that's the thing. You were Spock until that very moment, and then I was like, holy shit, that's weird.
Because I'm not Spock.
All right, I got to reevaluate. God damn it.
We'll have to figure out who's who in Star Trek, you know.
Yeah, who is who?
When Varney drinks too much grape soda.
Now, Michael is adversarial with everyone, and that's why I love him. I have to say, I laugh my balls off when Michael pisses people off. I think it is the funniest thing in the world because Michael gets under people's skin in a way that I don't know. I don't think I'm capable. I'm capable of a lot. I don't think I could do what Michael does. Michael drives people apeshit.
Yeah. I kind of pride myself on that. I know exactly how to make people go from 0 to 100 on the pissed off meter when I want them to. It's great.
Well, and you take no build up. Like your first comment out of the gate. Goes for the jugular.
Right.
Rabid pit bull. Immediately.
Yeah.
Immediately.
It depends on what's going on. If it's someone that I think might be able to be reasoned with, I'll be okay at first. But if it's someone who's already over the hill with their comments, I don't allow it to build. I just start at 100%.
I mean, there are times when we're just joking around, having a little bit of fun.
Yeah.
And Michael just comes in with, like, he's just throwing, like, the double axe handle, like, off the top.
Off the top of a building towards someone's head.
Someone lights a match and Michael's a fire hose to put it out. It's just like, God damn, I get more messages about Michael. I'm like, one of these days, I'm going to post some of these so that you can read them. People just say, why? What the fuck? Who is this guy? He's my friend.
So Michael's kind of like a human bucket of gasoline just waiting to be poured on a fire.
Totally.
Yeah, he is there to be unreasonable and to just shut people up. But you know what? That's the thing. It's so, like, I don't know. I really enjoy it. To me, it's, what's the word I'm looking for when something feels really good because you just exactly, yeah, like sex.
Like Michael is a Facebook vagina that you can just ease into.
No, that
I did not need that image. Thank you very much. I think the word you're looking for is simpatico.
No, not simpatico. It's when you see something happen that makes you feel better. It soothes you because you needed it to happen.
It's the vagina.
And it makes you ejaculate. No, not a vagina.
You put your dick in it.
Shut up, Nearing.
I think Nearing's a little focused.
Oh, fucking God. Nearing has to show up to these things like stewed, utterly stewed every single time lately. I worry about you. I have an intervention. Right, what, the,
No, I know
Skyward Town 15 is going to be an intervention for Nearing.
It should be.
You're thinking of the one Schadenfreude, right?
Yeah.
No, yeah, cathartic. Sure. Cathartic. Thank you. There it is right
that's
there.
That's it. All
right. Michael is a catharsis. I love it. I love it because I just watch him and I go, you know what? What Michael's doing to them is what I feel like they do to me.
Yeah.
And so I'm grateful. I don't want to do it because I just don't have the energy to be that mean.
Yeah.
Michael has so much energy.
Well, the way I see it, if I would never, you know, attack someone for no good reason. Like I would never say, "Hey, you're fat," like a lot of stupid people would do that we see in these threads for no good reason. But once they become a douche, I open up everything. There's nothing off limits. That's the way I look at it. They deserve everything right. coming to them at that point.
Yeah, this Margaret Thatcher death thing is just opening a lot of doors.
Yes.
How did Hugo Chavez get like all these glowing reviews by North American media, and Margaret Thatcher's a conflicted story? You know, like, at the end of the day, the country was actually better off when she left. I mean, you can't argue that. It was in the shitter. That's why she got voted in.
Yeah.
So.
I was just going to say, interestingly, Pete Woods on Facebook posted a question just for British people who grew up during the time of Thatcher, saying, you know, aside from all this stuff going on in the American media, what was your impression of growing up under Thatcher? Was it something you liked, or do you think she got a raw deal in the media or something like that? How did you really feel growing up with her as prime minister? And it was basically the same thing as in America. It was very conflicted. People either loved her or hated her.
I pissed Pete off so badly on that thread that he blocked all three of my personas from that thread. I'm still friends with him, but I can't find that thread anywhere.
No, I think he deleted it.
I think he did delete it.
Yeah.
Unless he got mad at all of us. But, I mean, it's interesting. It's like... You know, Pete's like, well, how did you feel? You know what? Ask Americans how they felt during Bush. And then ask Americans how they felt during Obama. Now, what you're going to get is you're going to get the noisiest people exaggerating the situation. You're going to get Bush, oh, God, it was a time of lying and misery. And Obama, oh, God, he's a communist, and oh, he strayed so far from the Constitution that we thought that the country was never going to be the same. You know, you're going to get people just talking shit. And I just don't believe it. You know, I think the crazier, because, I mean, England's there. England's beautiful. It's still there. It's fine. The crazier things that people are saying, like, the more I just have to kind of delegitimize everything that they say, period.
Nothing rivals the 16-year-old kid you had today who said Margaret Thatcher rigged the turnstiles to kill all the football fans.
I mean, it's frightening that they're growing up like this. It can't be possible, can it? Like, are they really this dumb? Like...
You know what it reminds me of? This is going to be a tortured analogy. But do you guys remember when Alan Moore did that Whatever Happened to the Man of Tomorrow? And you know, it was the last dark days of Superman, and there was that one part where he pointed out that all his normal pain in the asses, like Terra Man and Mixius Pitalik, were coming back murderous. And all the murderers, like Luther and Brainiac, were coming back fucking genocidal. And that's what it's been like this week with Thatcher. Like, all the normal, reasonable libs are turning into pains in the asses, and all the guys who are normally pains in the asses are turning into fucking bomb throwers.
I know. I'll admit straight out that I knew very little about Thatcher's politics, and I still don't know that much about her. So I really have no opinion either way.
Well, I honestly, we're all finding out that I think we're all learning a lot because, frankly, the image of Thatcher that was presented to Americans was an extremely positive one. I mean, I remember Thatcher and Reagan being partners in the Cold War during the 1980s, and that was such the Iron Lady. This was all positive stuff. And to hear Britons talk about it, they're saying, well, she sucked America's dick. And, you know, at the expense of, you know, whatever. I think we're all finding out this Turnstile story. Who knew about that? Did any of us know about that?
I know a little bit about it because as a Canadian, back when Thatcher was actually Prime Minister, we were actually still part of the British monarchy. So we were actually still part of England, more or less. So we got to see quite a bit about her. And, I mean, the way she came into power was much like Reagan. Like in North America, Jimmy Carter basically drove the car into the ditch, set it on fire and walked away. That's what happened in Britain. They were just highly taxed. Everyone got everything for free. And as a result, the country was crumbling. So she came in, she started cutting social programs like free milk for everybody. And so as a result, a lot of the liberals are like, oh, this is the worst thing ever.
They call it a petty act of savagery, which I think is a fantastic turn of phrase. And I understand it. I understand what they're saying. Take a step back and examine it a little bit more. I mean, honestly, they may be exaggerating.
Margaret Thatcher, the milk snatcher.
Right. The way I would describe it is she seems to be the polar opposite of an Obama. She is, instead of give a man a free fish every day, she's the one who wants to teach the man to fish. It's the opposite of the Obama crowd, so of course they're going to hate her.
The one way to think of it, the United States is more center right. Like they believe, you guys believe in personal responsibility and all those things. England is left. It's center left. It has been always, and she was a staunch conservative. So the reason that she's polarizing is the fact that she was kind of out of the norm for the country. But she actually did a lot of good for the country. It might have been painful, but you still accomplished good things.
I agree with. I spent a year over there, my junior year, and they make Vermont look like a red state. You cannot imagine a more emasculated, dickless group of men children than English men. They are overgrown children with no dick.
and that again.
No dick whatsoever. They're cockless. And
are we trying to get them to go from zero to hate in one second?
Nearing's had a few drinks. Having said that, proceed, Nearing.
Having said that, so I mean, they're just so completely and totally dependent on the state for everything, you know. So you get someone over there who's going to be talking independence and personal responsibility, and the problem with socialism is you run out of other people's money and all that stuff, and it's not just as polarizing as it would be, say, in Vermont or Oregon. It is an absolute lightning bolt to the very heart of what these people believe.
Well, I noticed the difference between what I saw the I guess I'll, for lack of a better term, just call them the nobody Facebookers, just random people who happen to be liberal, you know, saying they're glad she's dead and blah, blah, blah. But when I looked at some of the professional, as I'll call them, liberals, ones who get paid for, you know, their journalism or whatever, I didn't really find a lot of them that had bad things to say. Even though they were very liberal, they had great things to say about Thatcher.
Again, I just hear a lot of mixed things, you know. Like it seems like, you know, like Ethan is saying, that seems like Thatcher was very polarizing, and a lot of the posts I've seen are kind of like online reviews I see of hotels and restaurants. It's either like X Hotel is either the greatest restaurant in history or it's the worst restaurant in history, and there's almost no gray area.
Now, can you wrap your brain, CHV, around the idea that Chavez was actually giving glowing reviews by the North American media, and then contrast that with Thatcher being at best conflicted in North American media? Do you see a disconnect there at all? Or?
Well, honestly, I completely ignored Chavez, and you know, I was glad when he died because I just thought he was a thug. But you know, if people want to think that he was just some sort of great, you know, champion for liberty, I really don't care either way. Because, I don't know. I just think Chavez was a nobody.
Well, I mean, he was a dictator, and that's the funny thing. Like, a dictator got a got much love from the American media, and Thatcher, who actually worked with America, just got raked over the coals. It's astonishing, but that is life in North America.
I think it's kind of sad, is because Thatcher spent her final years in dementia and had a very slow, sad death. And I mean, my response to people who want to harp on her is, Jesus, at least wait till the body is cold.
Well, that's correct. I agree with that. I don't think anybody can argue that. But I have to go back. I'm trying to be fair and really examine my own behavior lately, because I'm getting old and pumping estrogen. Really. I have to go back and look. How did I behave when Teddy Kennedy died? I made a lot of jokes. Now, I don't think I was like, hooray, that Teddy Kennedy's dead. He was a fucking dick. But I wasn't respectful. On the day that he died, I made jokes. So I don't know if it's the same thing as being like, this guy was a fucking despot, and thank God he's dead, which is what I'm hearing a lot of with Thatcher. But it's still disrespectful. So I think the knife cuts both ways, at least when it comes to my behavior. I won't point the finger of scorn at everybody, but I will at myself.
Well, in all of these cases, I do, just as I was pointing out earlier, there were these professional liberals who were talking highly of Thatcher on her death day. Even on Teddy Kennedy's death day, one of the most liberal people we know of, Henry Rollins, came out asking, where is the eulogy for Mary Jo Kopechne? Even he was pointing out, there's a problem here. We're celebrating a man who killed a woman, left her in the lake on purpose for 4 days before calling anyone to help. Possibly could have saved her if he would have called right away, but he didn't want to get thrown in jail for drunk driving.
Why does pointing that out feel like bullying to me? Because I understand it. Like I feel like being hypercritical of liberals who really fuck up is bullying. Like you could easily just go after him about that and go after him, but at the same time he's like the son of Joseph Kennedy, last surviving Kennedy brother, family that's endured so much tragedy. At one point, seemed like the high point of the American experiment with JFK's presidency, and he acts he showed drunkenness, cowardice throughout his entire life. As far as I'm concerned, Teddy Kennedy was a coward.
The best, right after he died, and I wish I could remember who it was. It was some professional liberal columnist. But she wrote a huge story about Mary Jo Kopechne and about how Kennedy went on to be this liberal lion. And the very last sentence of the column is, who knows, maybe Kopechne would have felt like it was worth it.
Yeah, I've read that, yeah.
Oh, my God. Weird. And the odd thing, I mean, Kennedy also protected people that raped women, in his own family, on his own property. Right. There was a lot of things that he did. And then at the end of it, he was the one leading the charge in grilling Clarence Thomas for pubic hair on a Coke, questions when he was being confirmed for the Supreme Court. Like, it's just the ultimate hypocrisy there. It's like, not only did he, kill a woman, accidentally, I'm sure, but more importantly, he actually, protected rapists. And then he's questioning the morality of Clarence Thomas. I mean, that's so absurd to think that he was doing that.
Well, I think the worst part about the Mary Jo Kopechne thing is that he was never repentant about it. He kept insisting that, oh, no, there was nothing he could have done. That's the part that pisses people off.
He loved Chappaquiddick jokes. I mean, you can find it on Google. No one enjoyed Chappaquiddick jokes more than Kennedy himself.
What year did that whole thing happen? Did that happen after JFK was killed?
Oh, yeah, it's 69.
Yeah.
Even after Bobby. I mean, this is why it feels like bullying. To mention it is because, it was a tough time for the Kennedy family. At the same time, this man showed no courage his entire life. I think he was a coward, you know, as a young Kennedy while his brothers were still alive. He was a coward afterwards. I hated the fact that he went back channel to the Soviet Union during the Reagan years and was sending them messages saying, ignore what Ronald Reagan is saying. He's a despot. We can deal. We're going to get in power again, the Democrats, and you and I will deal. He was saying this in 1982 to the Soviet Union.
Yeah.
That's a despicable thing to do. That borders on treason as far as I'm concerned.
Ethan, do you think that if Bobby Kennedy would not have been assassinated, that he would have been a slam dunk for president that year?
Yes.
Yes.
Oh, absolutely. I mean,
have been a terrible president because Bobby Kennedy was mentally ill at that point. This is what people don't talk about. He was mentally ill. He didn't want to be president. What he wanted was he wanted to feel better. And he thought that he would be made to feel better by helping the poor. But if you actually watch interviews with Bobby Kennedy, even as late as, you know, February 68, the poor guy, he just was not there, did not want the job. And it was just, it would have been a mistake. It would have been a mistake for America.
Do you mean he suffered from depression?
Yeah, deep depression. And you hear him speak and he's disjointed. He's unable to stay focused. He gave a few good speeches in 68, including the one on the day Martin Luther King was assassinated. Brilliant. But there was something wrong. There was a major disconnect. And I'm a fan of the Kennedys. I love the Kennedys. I've read everything about them, and I do like them. I think that had he become president, it would have been a terrible thing. And but then on the other hand, we got Nixon. So, you know, who's to say what was worse? I think any of the options would have been terrible. Lyndon Baines Johnson probably should have served another term, but he was a pussy. So, you know. The idea of just being so like picking a war with Vietnam and then, you know, rubbing your hands and just being so upset with how it's going and then backing out and saying, I'm not going to run for a second term to finish this, to clean up this mess that I made, to me is just cowardice. You don't get to do what you want. This is what people, they say, oh, Obama is he's such a socialist. Look at the things that he's doing. Ha, ha, ha. Well, you don't get to do what you want when you're president. You don't.
Right.
Things happen. Circumstances happen, and you respond to them either with bravery and intelligence or with cowardice. And, all LBJ wanted to do was his war on poverty. He picked a fight with Vietnam. He lied about the Tonkin, Gulf of Tonkin incident, got us into Nam, and then fucked us over and left it to Nixon to clean up.
Right.
And that's very much like the idea that you don't get to do what you want as president is absolutely the case. In 2000, it was Bush and Gore was against nation building. He was against the idea of going in, invading countries, setting up, you know, a democracy and letting it run. Gore campaigned heavily to do that. Gore was the one campaigning to do what happened in Iraq, not Bush. So it constantly happens. You deal with what cards you are dealt. And
this is the thing that's always struck me about when people say Bush isn't intellectually curious, is everyone after 9/11 more or less confirmed their own worldviews. The hawks became more hawkish. The doves rallied around the flag for a little bit, then went back to being doves. But here you have Bush, like you just said, who campaigned in 2000 against nation building and had a change of view when it came to Iraq. I mean, it would have been very easy just to, you know, carpet bomb the country, say, you know, fuck you, we're going to drive a dagger into the heart of the Middle East and be done. But by putting the boots on the ground, by staying to rebuild, that's Bush going against what he campaigned on. That's the definition of intellectually curious. Your worldview has evolved.
Yeah, I mean, it was a crazy time. And a lot of people forget that Gore actually campaigned to do what happened in Iraq. You know, they blame Bush, but it was what Gore campaigned to do. And oddly, Bush is the one, you know, taking the fall for it, that it's the most evil thing ever. But
well, when they say that Bush wasn't intellectually curious, they meant about all things science when it came to stem cell research, when it came to, you know, the environment. You know, Bush's views seem to be retrogressive, and he made no bones about it. He just said, fuck that. You know, I mean, I don't necessarily, you know, when it came to the things that that the left was bringing up in terms of, hey, the scientific advancement, you know, let's not, you know, Bush was a creationist. I mean, this is the thing, you know, Bush actually fought to have creationism, Mike S. Miller creationism taught in schools. And to me, that's, you know, that pisses me off. So, I mean, I'm not, you know. When they said Bush is incurious, no, I agree in a lot of ways. I don't have the problems with Bush's invasion of Iraq that the left does. I think that whether or not there were WMDs in Iraq is beside the point. I think going to Iraq was a pretty good idea. I think the long-term strategy in the Middle East made sense to me at the time. I don't know if it's going to pay off long term now or not, but at least it made sense to me. But a lot of Bush's views were childish; they were silly.
No, there were a lot of things I disagreed with him on, and that's the difference. Though we don't have to a little bit less than on the left, we don't have to agree with everything that the party is about.
So true. So like, true.
We can, I mean, we vote on issues. Like, I'm a fiscal conservative. I believe that, you know, free markets will always solve the problem, and that, you know, government shouldn't be involved in everyone's business, and just leave it at that. And, I mean, there's going to always be other things that are added in that aren't all that fun.
Yeah, but
you take it.
The problem with free markets, though, is there's a thin line between free markets and laissez-faire economics. And I think laissez-faire economics, well, we saw what happened with that when the inmates were allowed to run the asylum after Glass-Steagall was repealed. You know, everything went to hell. And
explain that to me, CHV. What is Glass-Steagall anyway?
Glass-Steagall was a law that was instituted after 1929, basically to prevent the run-up to the Depression prior to 29 from those same circumstances happening over again. And basically, it put regulations on banks so they couldn't, you know, play with funny money. They couldn't artificially inflate credit, which led to was one of the things that led to the collapse in 1929. And then under Bill Clinton in the early 90s, he got pressure by a bunch of bankers, a bunch of Wall Streeters, essentially saying, well, we don't need Glass-Steagall anymore. You know, that's the circumstances that led to the Depression. That's ancient history. You know, we're a different culture now. We don't have to worry about that. Then they repealed Glass-Steagall, and it was the same thing all over again.
Can you buy stocks on market again, on margin again? I mean,
well, yeah, you could.
I mean, because that's what as far as I'm concerned, that's what caused the Depression is the stock market collapse, which came from ordinary people buying stock on margin, you know, them getting fucked with by big bankers who actually understood how to manipulate the marketplace, knowing when to get out, and these people who were buying on margin were just completely effed over. Now, is that still the case? Does the repeal of Glass-Steagall mean that you can buy stocks on margin?
Well, yes. I don't know personally, but I know like one of the biggest thing, and this had to do with a lot of what happened with the mortgages, that there was a lot of stuff that had to do with credit default swaps, where basically credit, like artificially inflated credit, and I'm talking like I'm an economist, but I'm really not. But basically, debt could just be swept under the rug the same way it was at Enron, and sooner or later you just have this, you know, bubble that's just pumped up with so much helium, and eventually it's going to pop, and then everything collapses underneath it.
Now, part of the problem, though, is it wasn't truly free market, though, because the reason that the Glass-Steagall Act was was kicked aside, was a trade-off. Like, the Clinton wanted housing and urban development to be focused on giving loans, risky loans, to urban centers so that, you know, more people could buy a house. And in return, what the banks were doing was selling those bad loans, those risky loans that weren't being paid, and you could actually bet against them being paid.
Right.
So that's how the financial market collapsed this time. It was because people were basically betting against people being able to pay their bills or not.
Right.
And it blew up. So, I mean, that's not all, you know, all that fun. It's a little technical, but...
But yeah, I agree 100%, you know, and it's, you know, there's a movie that came out a few years ago. I'm not sure if you've seen it, called Inside Job. And it's a documentary basically about all the stuff that led up to the 2008-2009 Wall Street crash. And it just basically just repeats what Oakley had said, especially about the credit derivatives and the default swaps. And that's the thing that just drives me the craziest about what happened. And the same thing with Enron, too, is basically no one was held accountable. You know, you have all these people who are playing the market like it's a casino and almost dragged down the entire world economy. And no one was ever held accountable.
Did you see the Enron documentary, The Smartest Guys in the Room?
Yeah, I've seen it more than once.
Oh, that's so great.
Yeah.
Oh, what evil.
What evil lurks in the hearts of man, right?
Not in my heart. I have nothing but goodness in my heart. I really do.
Unless Randy Perry's around.
I mean, no harm to anyone except for Randy Perry.
Jeffrey Skilling's brother, Tom, is actually a local celebrity in Chicago because he's a meteorologist for Channel 9 WGN, and he's been here for something like 30, 40 years. So he's like the weather guru of Chicago.
Wow.
What I find funniest about Randy Pear, I have this theory that there's like a hierarchy of nerddom. Like when you go to a comic convention, there's the ones that even though you're a nerd, you still look down on them.
I know those guys.
Amongst assholes, Randy Perret must be the lowest of the low, because even Ian Auld has called him an asshole.
You know you're done at that point.
Poor guy's on the low rung of the ladder. I feel bad for him sometimes.
I'm still working on getting Ian back. I thought we were going to get Randy back for a little while. He was making some noises that he just needed a break. And when someone just needs a break, they... You know, it seems like they're going to come back, but have not gotten Randy back. I need him there. Need him on my page. I think I broke him. I think it was me that actually broke Randy because I started saying, fuck you, you're a dick. And I mean, when I do that, like, I should never indulge to do that. I'm supposed to be the peacemaker. But when I do that, that's it. Well, he said, fuck you, too.
Yeah, that's his only way to block you, is to delete himself from your page, because anybody else on your page, he will just block them, like he did to me. But since it's your page, that's his only way out.
Exactly.
Well, Darren kind of blew his cork the other day at that one guy. I'm not sure, was it about Thatcher or something like that? But he said fuck you to some guy who was really kind of being obnoxious about the Thatcher death.
It was
Rick Warren's kids.
Oh, that's it. That's it. I'm sorry.
Yeah, Darren threw down with that guy, Trent.
Yeah, Trent's a conservative. Trent's a conservative. Which surprised me. I was trying to sort out what was going on there because I wasn't reading the thread very carefully. I don't know, but what I did notice was that Darren wasn't being funny and glib, and Darren is the loosest, most cheerful guy. If you make a dirty joke, he'll make an even dirtier joke. That's just who he is. I absolutely love him. To see Darren being like, you know what? Fuck you. That is like, you know, there are some people you can measure like the degree of you being an asshole based on their reaction to you. I mean, you know, if you get somebody, if you get Doris Day to be like, fuck you, motherfucker, die, burn in hell, it means that there's something seriously wrong with you. And to see Darren do that, I mean, I actually said something. I was like, I've never seen Darren behave. And Darren kind of tried to come back and be Darren, but he couldn't with this guy.
He tried so hard. It was your thread, and you had said that, and this is even before Thatcher. This is like 45 minutes before the news of Thatcher broke.
You're right.
But you were saying that the libs were being very, very mean-spirited about Rick Warren's kid.
Yeah.
And what did
Rick Warren's kid ever do to anyone? You can say what you want about Margaret Thatcher, but what did Rick Warren's kid ever do to anyone? And for all you know, Rick Warren's kid disagreed with his father entirely. You don't even know. Okay, anyway, so that having said that...
So, you and Trent were having a couple exchanges, and then I'm going to butcher this girl's the pronunciation of this girl's name, but this girl, Danielle Denig...
Yeah,
I don't know how you pronounce
the
name. She said something, and Trent responded by saying, "You know, all libs have been savage about this," and then that just pushed Darren's button. Darren's like, "Who the fuck are you to say that it's all liberals doing this?" And Trent was like, "Who the fuck am I? Who the fuck are you?" And then it just escalated.
I liked it when Darren called the guy a Jeff.
I mean, there's just those moments that are just like if you were in a movie, it's the record scratch.
Yeah.
You know, it's just like, oh, shit just got real.
This was a week of death, wasn't it? I mean, honestly, you know, I haven't had this much death happen. And what's weird about it is that, all right, Michael was just saying, all my shit broke. And I told you, you know, all my shit broke last week. Mad Men, the season premiere, was all about death. 2 hours of death and doom because they're about to embark on the year 1968, which was a very tough year for Americans in terms of two major assassinations and just Vietnam and just coffins coming home. Just death, death, death. And then this, and it just won't stop. It was Rick Warren's kid's suicide, Annette Funicello, Roger Ebert, you know, Margaret Thatcher, just all in a row. So what's going on? Like, you know, it's just weird how this is all happening all at once. Do you feel doomy right now? Do you sense that something bad is on the horizon?
The way I view it is there are tens of thousands of people that die every day. It just so happens that a few of them happen to be famous ones this week, maybe five or six or whatever. That's more than we'd usually have happen in a short amount of time.
And Roger Ebert and Thatcher had been languishing for some time, although Roger, he wrote almost up until the very end. I mean, I think the last column he posted was about 4 days before he died. And his last line that he ever wrote was, "See you at the movies." And because I think he knew that he was not going to last much longer.
Let me be indelicate for a minute. The hell is wrong with him for having his photograph taken the way he was?
I wondered that.
What exactly was the point of that? What kind of illness mentally? Or was it just supremely brave? I found it disgusting and very difficult to look at. At the same time, I feel sorry for him. But I'm just trying to work out what the thought process was, what the attitude was. Was it defiance? Was it – what do you guys think?
I was just going to say, you know, in Chicago, he was so popular, and when he came out like that, you know, even though he looked pretty grotesque because his lower jaw was basically consumed by that cancer, he was looked on as being very brave, and you know, he's got as much right to be out in public as anyone else. I mean, you know, yeah, he was difficult to look at, but that doesn't mean he had to spend the rest of his life in a bell tower, you know, hidden away.
Oh, the opposite of that is Annette Funicello, who also died this week. Now, Annette Funicello's body was being eaten up by MS. Now, we didn't see Annette Funicello except for some sneaky photographs that were taken by the paparazzi that were very upsetting to see.
Right.
So we have two people who died, both who went through very, very sad physical degenerations just before their deaths. I just wonder what's appropriate.
I was just going to say the difference is between what you said and what CHV said. Nobody's saying Roger Ebert should have stopped, you know, appearing in public or working if he wanted to. I think what Ethan was questioning is why he would purposely use a photo of him with his mouth hanging open like that as his promo photo when he could continue to use, you know, one that maybe he was more proud of.
I got to side with CHV on this. I mean, it's like, you know, when you get cancer and you go through chemo and you're bald, you know, even as a woman, there's something kind of taking ownership of your life, saying, you know what, I'm not defined by my illness. I'm still a beautiful woman, you know, hair or no hair, and this is who I am, and, you know, fuck cancer. I'm going to be as public and as proud of who I am and what I look like as I ever was, you know, whatever ravages the illness have done to you, be damned.
And even when he was sick, or after, you know, he had the jaw removed and stuff like that, he stayed busy, busy, busy. He wrote all the time. And I think it was just to give himself something like a sense of normalcy and something positive to focus on. But he still went to movies. He still wrote a bunch of reviews, not as much as he did back in the day. But even when he wasn't writing reviews, he would write blog postings on politics, which prior to that time he almost never did.
And that came from his wife. I mean, he is kind of known in his later years for having been very vocal politically. And some of us, you know, kind of thought he was a little shrill about his politics. But the reason he got into that was because his wife, Chaz, didn't want, now that he couldn't communicate verbally, his wife Chaz didn't want to see him become insular or insulated, and she suggested social media to him as a way he could still communicate to the world at large, even though he couldn't do it verbally. And I mean, he just exploded after that on the social media scene. He was, you know, he probably tweeted, you know, probably 4 or 5 dozen tweets a day. He was active. He had 2 active Facebook walls. And I think that's where it came from, his wife not wanting to see him kind of shut in on himself.
Well, I was going to comment on that as well. I think after the whole cancer thing happened and the jaw situation came to light, I think that's when he got much more angry politically and started posting about it on, you know, Twitter and Facebook all the time. However, with one thing Nearing said about him not being able to speak anymore, they actually did make a voice box with his real voice that he could use later on over the past few years.
I saw that, and I was thinking the exact same thing, and I saw a clip of Roger speaking to his voice with that. It was almost like the Stephen Hawking device, except he just used his own voice. And it just struck me as being just so incredibly sad that, you know, you could see that Roger was getting a lot out of it, that he got his voice back, even though it was electronic, but that he was reduced to a machine to be able to sound like a human being again, because, you know, his entire ability to speak was, you know, at least verbally was gone. And that whole segment just struck me as just being so sad.
And as far as his appearance goes, it's not like Ebert was known for his beauty.
Right.
So, I mean,
neither was Gene Siskel.
That could be a factor why he, you know, felt comfortable going out in public like that. I understand Ethan's point. There's a certain pride that his generation and our generation to a degree had, that you wouldn't want that. You wouldn't want to be remembered for that. And that could be part of the issue.
Yeah.
I'm not against what he did. I don't know if I have an opinion about it. I just want to know why. I want to know what his reason was for it. Because there was a reason for it. That's an aggressive thing to do.
I think he was saying "fuck you" to cancer.
Yeah,
maybe.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, that's probably it. The only reason. Now, as far as your question about Doom, it's going to sound like a really dumb thing, but it's the Howard Stern vacation curse. Every time Howard Stern goes on vacation, celebrities die.
Do we know what he does on these vacations?
No, that's odd.
Is he causing this?
But like Michael Jackson, Whitney Houston, they all died when he was on vacation. Every time he goes on vacation, three celebrities die. And he's on vacation this week.
Wow. Yeah, but a lot of deaths, when they happen, they're not exactly a shock. You know, like when Whitney Houston died, not really a surprise. And in, you know, like Thatcher and Ebert, again, they'd been languishing for a while. So it wasn't like someone was kind of cut down in the prime of their lives.
And Annette. I mean, you know. Yeah. None of the deaths were really shocking. Those were the big three, right?
Yeah.
You know, Thatcher, Annette, and Ebert.
You know, forgive my ignorance, but is Frankie Avalon still alive?
Yes.
Okay.
And doing quite well. Very healthy.
It's sad, like, but I thought Annette was actually had passed already. I feel awful for saying that, but
no, but she didn't. She didn't make any public appearances. I was just saying on another interview. Annette frustrates me because over this one thing, I have two Annette Funicello autographs that I mailed away to her 3 years ago, and I sent her a donation and I mailed it to her home, these two DVD covers, and I just said, you know, hi, I wonder if you would sign these for me. And they came back signed with signs of tremor.
Oh.
I mean, it's her autograph, her classic autograph, but it's very shaky. And I showed it to a few people who said, Ethan, clearly they're not real. Have you seen photographs of her? She's not well. I said, I know she's not well, but she's been dealing with multiple sclerosis for 20 years. Now, you can't tell me that she doesn't have any quality of life and hasn't for 20 years. I'm just not sure. I think that if these are not real, they're very cruel forgeries, and I don't know who would do them.
Right.
Because if they were going to be a genuine forgery, you would just, Annette, you would do her signature. Why would you show signs of a tremor like that?
Yeah.
Bizarre. And so I keep looking at them and just wondering. I guess to me they're real because I feel like even then she would get fan letters and just want to reply, you know, sign things, something to do.
Well, I mean, who would have been doing it since you sent them directly to her house? Obviously, somebody at that house did it. And you're right. Why would they, someone within her own house, maybe a caretaker or a relative, why would they purposely kind of make fun of her by doing it that way?
That's how I feel about it. Now, it's quite possible that there would be somebody who would act as a secretarial autographer in the house. Maybe her husband would do that in response to receiving donations to her MS Foundation, or maybe she actually hired a secretary to do it.
Yeah,
but yeah. The tremor just makes it seem cruel and like weird if it was secretarial. So I don't know. Nobody knows what the quality of her life actually was. We saw two scary photographs of her taken by the paparazzi that showed her unrecognizable in a wheelchair, just so sad. I mean, you know.
Right.
One could extrapolate all kinds of things from those photographs, but I don't know. I'm not sure.
I would guess they're real just based on those qualities that you pointed out.
Yeah, you have to kind of, I mean, just as somebody who collects autographs, you know, you have to kind of figure a few things. Like I know for a fact that when I send, you know, a signature I get a signature from somebody who was, you know, 20th down on the list of credits for a movie that came out in 1945, and they're living in right here in North Carolina. That signature is real.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's like, on the other hand, you know, the Doris Day signature I got on Pillow Talk. No, it's probably not, you know.
Yeah.
You know, so that's the thing. You have to kind of make, you know, use logic and make decisions. But I was sad. Sheriff woke me up to tell me that Annette Funicello died 2 minutes ago. And I was like, oh, fuck.
With the assumption that the Annette signatures are real, I would value those more than most other signatures because obviously she was in pain at the time that she did those, if those are real.
Oh, yeah. They're obviously incredible or they're horrible. I don't know.
Yeah,
you know, that's the thing. That's why I'm conflicted about them. I hate to even think about it, but I'm forced to think about it now more than ever.
Right.
You know? I was a big fan. I still am a big fan, I should say. I love Annette Funicello. I love those beach movies.
Yeah.
Marvelous. CHP, do you like those beach movies?
I haven't seen too many Annette Funicello movies, but I do like movies from the same area with or the same era with Yvonne Craig. Because I don't know, maybe it's just my sense of taste, but I think she's about the same age as Annette. But you know, like back in their glory days, I always thought she was a lot cuter.
I always like I've seen a bunch of the beach movies, but I always remember her from the peanut butter commercials. That's just who she was when because by the time, you know, I could see her, that's who she was in a contemporary sense. So
what brand of peanut butter was it?
Wasn't it Jiffy?
No, nope.
I think Skippy. It was.
Skippy?
Okay.
I couldn't remember. I knew it was peanut butter, but yeah, that's what I remember her for, being, you know, in those peanut butter commercials most, but I also really enjoyed her in the beach movies. You know, as a closer, I had an idea of a comparison. Who is more American, Barack Obama or Vladimir Putin? Now I'm asking
conundrum.
In you know, contrasting, like earlier this week, Obama made a reference to one of his guests being an attractive woman and ended up having to apologize and basically castrate himself in front of the world.
Obama and that lady had been friends for a really long time. I don't think she was offended.
No, it was just stupid that he had to apologize. I mean, come on, you can't say, when did society become a place where you're not allowed to say, hey, you're an attractive lady, or whatever the case may be. And then you look at Putin, who got flashed by protesters, and the look on his face, and I didn't know this yesterday when I posted it, but Putin actually gave the thumbs up. He gave the thumbs up.
Seemed to enjoy it.
No, he did an interview later, and his response was, I don't know what they were shouting. I don't know what they were protesting. I couldn't read the writing, but I really liked it. That's what he said.
I like Greg Gutfeld's response. I saw him on Red Eye last night. They showed the video. These women were just like, obviously they were topless, and they were all like running toward him and being stopped by guards. But Greg Gutfeld's observation, he said, it's like there are a bunch of beautiful cockroaches running toward him. Like, you don't know what they're doing, but it's like you just want to stare at them, you know?
Now, do you think if it was a North American politician that he would jump out of the way like he's about to be shot or something? Not for fear of being shot, but he can't look like he's enjoying it.
Right. Yeah. American culture is still very puritanical. And, you know, the idea of seeing a topless woman is just so horrifying to some people that it's nuts.
Well, and I would blame it actually less on the puritanical than on the feminism, that by leering, you're desensitizing or dehumanizing the girl. I think you'd catch more flack from the left than the right.
Yeah. I mean, there could be something there.
Do you know who Imogen Lloyd Webber is?
Yep.
Yeah, she's a very
hot liberal British chick.
Yeah, hot British chick. She her comment on that was that Putin's response by like looking at them with a smile on his face, that was like the ultimate response to protesters. That would immediately make them think they just lost whatever they were trying to do.
Oh, absolutely. He played it perfectly. Yeah. It was genius. I mean, to smile at them, give them the thumbs up, and then say, I have no idea what they're talking about, but their breasts were spectacular.
Right. <You know? laughs> He won that confrontation.
I mean, that was just genius. I mean, an American politician probably wouldn't know. Maybe Chris Christie might be able, be quick-witted enough to play that off, but most of them, no. But on that note, is there a musical interlude tonight, or is there?
Well, actually, one thing I wanted to ask before we get into that, for a while now we've been using the Rob Granito song as the intro, which is awesome, but do you think it's time to maybe get a Van Skivertown theme song going?
Most definitely.
Yeah. I started to write one a while ago, never got around to finishing recording it because I was doing all these other ones for the show, but... Yeah, maybe we'll work on that for next week. Now, as far as this week goes, since I just put out a lyric video for one of my songs, I think we'll just do the studio version of Jane Jane. I did put out the lyric video for that, and maybe we'll post a link to it on the Van Skivertown Facebook page.
Perfect.
Let's check that out.
As always, great work by Michael CG. His Jane Jane. I love the song. It's brilliant.
Thank you.
Very nice. Very nice.
Yeah, one of my faves.
I liked it too.
Don't be left out. You gotta say you liked it now.
No, Alfie did not like it. Alfie Norris did not like it. Wherever he is, if he's listening, he did not like it. Fuck him. What does he know?
he's hating it right now.
Why would you? How could you not like that song? It's catchy. It's great. I don't understand what's wrong with people. They're just moronic. We never did decide who is more American, Obama or Putin.
Well, it's not about who's more American, who's more manly, and that's I don't know if that means the same thing, but it's Putin is definitely pumping testosterone, and Obama is definitely pumping that estrogen, and you know America is pumping estrogen. And that's just the reality right now. And it's a shame. I hope we get back to a point where men can be men, drink Russian vodka in the freezing cold, and look at women's boobies and smile, and everything's Yeah, no apologies necessary. That's just the way we are.
Right. I'm doing my best to live up to that dream.
Well, on that note, it has been a fantastic night. It's always good hanging out with my friends. Anyone have a salutation that they would like to offer?
I just want to say, nobody can drive you crazy if you don't give them the keys. Chicken soup for the soul.
I hate that book.
Oh, that's brilliant. And on that note, there's probably nothing more that could be said, so that could even improve upon that. So from Michael.
Good night, everybody.
CHV.
I have 8 meetings at work tomorrow, so I better get to bed.
It is 1:37 in the a.m. here, so probably so. And Naren.
Sweet dreams, sweetheart.
And from myself, again, it's always fun to hang out with friends. And Ethan, you can close the show.
Well, you know what? I have to say, I really liked having Oakley host this week. I think next week it's going to have to be Michael.
Oh, God.
Yeah, that'd be a lot of fun. Well, we'll make you do the most work. You have to do the music and host the show. Let's get a little variety and let everybody try it out and see how it feels. Thanks, everybody. A lot of fun, and we'll see you again next week. Bye-bye.
Bye.